Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to director Michael Mayer and choreographer Spencer Liff, two of the creators of the Go-Go's musical, Head Over Heels. Mayer won a Tony for his work on the original production of Spring Awakening, and also staged the smash revival of Hedwig and the Angry Inch that starred Neil Patrick Harris. For Head Over Heels, he's reteaming with Liff, a longtime resident choreographer on So You Think You Can Dance, and also the choreographer of the recent Broadway revival of Falsettos, after the two of them worked together on Hedwig and the Angry Inch. They're both in the studio with me today to tell me why 1980s hits and 16th century pastoral romances are two great tastes that taste great together. Hi, Michael and Spencer. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
Hello.
So I saw Head Over Heels the other night, and I really loved it. And also, I've had every single Go-Go song in my head since then. Is that just your state of being right now, and has it been for the last several months?
It's been that way for the last 2 years.
I imagine. Honestly. Because it turns out that musical is very catchy, you might be surprised to learn, right?
That it is. They're earworms. I go to sleep with them. I wake up with them. I wake up with a different one than I went to sleep with.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they switch in your head?
Definitely
do they rotate?
Switch, yeah.
It does. And I also, like, I listen to the Go-Go station on my Pandora. I'm one of the
wait,
whole
like now
for
you
Pandora.
Do? Because you
yeah,
haven't...
because it's like, and that entire era of music, Pat Benatar and, you know, even the Bangles and, you know, everybody that was of that era, that music has seeped into my soul now and I can't get enough of it.
What you say seeps into your soul now. Were you a fan of the Go-Go's before this? Did you know their music?
I knew all their music. I knew their big songs. I was one of those people that while reading the script went, oh, I didn't know that was a Go-Go song as well, which I think is the experience of a lot of our audience members who might know like the big five.
Right.
But
which are what? In everybody's head.
We
they
got
are,
the beat.
Yep.
Our Lips Are Sealed.
Our Lips Are Sealed. Vacation.
Uh-huh.
Head Over Heels.
Yep.
And
Cool Jerk,
Cool Jerk probably, and
Is Mad About You?
Mad About You.
Heaven Is
Place
on Earth. Those are our, like,
those are the biggies.
Right. Adjacent.
Yeah, yeah,
those
right,
are the Belinda.
Right. And
yeah.
Then I would also say people know...
Get Up and Go, people
Get
know.
Get Up and Go, they
oh, right,
know.
Right,
and they
right,
also
sure.
know... they know... oh, geez. You know, the one we don't actually sing to. It's just a,
this
it's
town?
A musical, This Town.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, right,
which
right.
It used to be in the show. It used to be the old opening number.
Yeah.
It got cut, and now it's our music throughout.
That was in San Francisco where that
no,
was?
That was
before
in,
that.
That was
before
in
that.
Ashland.
That was in Ashland.
In the original
so,
production.
Yeah,
we were not involved.
And
right.
even when we went to New York Stage and Film up at Vassar 2 years
right,
ago.
But we're not...
We've stopped since then.
Yeah.
Right, right. So we should say, for the listeners who don't know, this project originated at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland.
Right.
And that was in, 2015, I think. Yeah. And then this new version with you guys on board premiered earlier this year,
yeah.
In San Francisco.
Just a minute
right
ago
now,
in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
We opened in April.
Right, right. And is now on Broadway. And it's a wacky idea. It is The Hits of the Go-Go's, mm-hmm. and a couple of Belinda Carlisle solo tunes, including Heaven is a Place on Earth, and, of all things, this 16th century pastoral romance by Sir Philip Sidney called Arcadia.
No-brainer, right?
Totally. Please tell me how these two things fit together.
Originally, when the producers who acquired the rights to the Go-Go's songs to do a Go-Go's show... they thought, I believe, that it was going to be like a Jersey Boys type thing or Carole King. You know, it was going to be the story of the Go-Go's. And they went to the brilliant writer Jeff Witte, Tony winner for Avenue Q, and has written many other wonderful things. And he had this inspired idea to do this mashup. He was very familiar with the Sidney work. And had
Is he the only person one can say that of? I very dimly remember as an English major the fact that it maybe existed.
But you know what it is, though? It's the Arcadia, this which is what Sidney is best known for, was actually the source of some of Shakespeare's great plots.
Right.
He took some stuff for The Winter's Tale.
Yep.
From there, he took, I don't know if it's As You Like It or Twelfth Night, but there are elements that he famously borrowed from Arcadia, which was a very, very popular work at the time.
And people who know Shakespeare will even see that in Head Over Heels. They'll think,
absolutely.
Oh, that's fill in the blank with a Shakespeare play, right?
That's exactly right. So I think a lot of English scholars know of him, but not many people. It's true,
right? And Michael, did you have a connection to the Go-Go's music? I forgot to ask you that.
The Go-Go's, the Go-Go's. That was the soundtrack of my life when I moved to New York in 1980,
right?
And seeing them on MTV, which was a new thing then,
brand new at the time,
amazing.
Yeah.
I loved them, and they were to me. What I loved about them was there was this punk pop thing going on. I liked their punkiness and their irreverence.
What is it in the work of the Go-Go's that matches up with what is in the romance, the Arcadia?
It's in your face and unapologetic and fun. And
I think what Jeff found in it, and certainly what we've been trying to exploit in the best possible way, is the idea of a rhythmic center to it. There's this pulse of life that is beating through it.
Mm.
So taking that, the journey of Arcadia, a kingdom, running away from something that is inevitable, as inevitable as your heartbeat, as unstoppable as your breathing is. It's an involuntary thing that happens in your body. And there's something about the beat of the Go-Go songs. And not just We Got the Beat, but all of their songs. We only have one ballad in the whole show.
Yeah.
There's this consistent, irresistible beat that I think ties these things together.
And the plot apparently matches up. I mean, you've got the signposts are all pretty much there based on, I only read a summary of that romance. I'm not going to lie to you. But it seemed like, this all happened
is crazy. I mean, this was the story that was told in 1585.
Yeah,
and we can tell it, and it feels incredibly fresh today.
Yeah, right. And so what then is, because the show is super silly in the best possible way, but it also has a very clear kind of social and political message.
Right.
What is that message in your mind? And how closely does that match up with what's in Arcadia?
I think there are a few messages.
Yeah.
A large one is you have to change or die. I mean, that's the big one. I think that you have to be flexible. You have to be open to new ways of living, new ways of loving. It's about individual people accepting who their truest self is. It's about allowing yourself to give over to the purest love in spite of who you love. And so I think that's really important. I think there's a message about a kind of the danger of chauvinism and the potential for disaster if you don't allow other people to share, at least share, if not take over, certain privileges that you have been born with, you know, and lived with your generation after generation.
Right, which all feels very contemporary.
Yeah, it does.
All our characters find their true happiness when they accept themselves and when they can accept other people for who they are. Right. That's my favorite message, and I think the overlying that we get our happily ever after because we are willing to say, you do you, I'm going to do me. Right. Aren't we a beautiful universe?
Yeah. And so, Spencer, this, you've got two eras, basically, to draw on here as you're coming up with movements for this world, right? You've got the 80s and you've got the 16th century. How did those two things inform what you ended up doing on stage with it?
Well, I started out by not wanting to do either. I was very... Mm-hmm. We had... Michael and I discussed very early on, and he said, you're allowed to do anything you want, but no court dancing. And so I said, great. I said, right. I won't touch on that. It seemed like an obvious choice, and we didn't want to see people doing a minuet to We Got the Beat. That seemed to me like...
Did we not?
I could see how that would go off the deep end and fall into like a corny place. Michael has incredible taste, and I trust him when he's like, this is not the direction we want to go. So we didn't do that. And then I also knew personally that 80s movement comes with this like comedy feel to it. If you're doing like The Running Man and these things, you know, I was in The Wedding Singer, the musical, and it was all sort of 80s.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Dance moves, but they were meant to be funny and comic, and it takes you out of this timelessness that because we had these two eras, we were creating this fantasy world. So I thought, I'm going to do my own thing. The movement's going to be the most contemporary piece of the puzzle. I want to choreograph it like it's a classic Broadway show, meaning we have these big production numbers, and we sing, and then we do a dance break, and then we tell a little bit more story, and then we have a big finish. But within that structure, the actual moves and steps had to be unlike anything you'd seen. And then through that, we started to pull from this sort of voguing world and things that I'm like, well, that is actually 80s, although it's not the on-the-nose 80s that you would think. So that found its place. And then we added a sort of gay fantasia, you know, love moment in Act 2 where the whole world turns homosexual or lesbian for a moment.
I call it the when you're in love, the whole world is Jewish moment.
And it was in finding that number that I decided the only place in the show that I wanted there to be anything that represented a traditional court dance was when it was being done by the most untraditional style of couple. So in Turn to You, we have finally discovered, you know, what it's like to see our world do my version of what, you know, a classic sort of minuet feel. So those two things found their way in because they had a place, but that's not where we started.
As discussed, the Go-Go's has quite a strong beat, and it is very catchy. All their music is very catchy. And it is therefore easy to dance to. Is it easy, therefore, to choreograph to?
I mean, there's so much energy in the music, and there's my favorite instruments to choreograph to are guitar and drums, and those are like massively heavy in our show. So I would just sit there and listen to these things. I want to jump out of my chair to move to them. I'm a very athletic dancer. When I was performing myself, it was high energy and, you know, just dancing sort of at the peak of what you can physically do. And that's where we've pushed to. But we also, you know, these dancers make their own rhythm, whether it be like our intricate table dance in the opening number, or they're constantly snapping and doing things that you know, these people just drive this rhythm physically and emotionally.
Right. And how much do costumes play a part in kind of how you think about how it moves on stage and how it looks on stage? We should say that there are some extremely cool costumes by Arianne Phillips, who designed Hedwig and, you know, styled Madonna and did all sorts of cool things.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. An emerging artist. Her name is Madonna. You'll know her name.
Yeah, she's an extraordinary artist. and the clothes are really singular and beautiful. And she and Spencer worked really, really closely
and
together.
And they're also sort of era, kind of timeless era mashup. Kind of collage-y, right?
They are. I mean, she's a fashion designer, even more so than a costume designer. She's she has this incredibly cool eye and knew how to create costumes for dancers because she's done all of Madonna's tours.
Right.
But I was lucky enough that she wanted me to be part of creating the ensemble characters. So I sat down with her and I showed her pictures of who we had cast and I said, this is who they are to me. She's the one that's like salt of the earth. She's the pretty Barbie girl. These two are the twins. These two, you know, and so she was able to take that and make it a reality.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And she was really, when Ari and I were in London working on the opera Marnie, we spent an enormous amount of time at the V&A Museum and at the Portrait Gallery going through and looking at the Tudor silhouettes and pointing at things together and talking. So she was very, it was very rooted in the Sydney period as well. So it was, the clothes are kind of a mashup as well.
Right, yeah. So we alluded to this a little bit earlier. You guys came on board this project as it sort of already existed and gone through one version of itself. And and this is the thing that happens with, you know, all sorts of projects as they develop over time. Like sometimes people go away and other people come on board. What appealed to you about this project and what did you feel like were the things that you really wanted to sort of underscore when you jumped on board?
Well, when I first read it, I flipped for it. It was, I read it before they did it in Oregon, and I did not see the Oregon Shakespeare Festival production. I thought it was really exciting. I loved the concept of it. I thought it was very long, I will say, and not, and I don't mean that in a critical way. It was just early on in its process, so it was a very, very dense read, and there were characters that we ended up cutting, and we did some restructuring and stuff. So
massive restructuring.
Well, I saw. I really did see great potential in it.
Yeah.
And I really wanted it to go in a certain direction, and it wasn't what Jeff Witte wanted. So when we were up at New York Stage and filmed 2 summers ago, and this is when I brought Tom Kitt on and Spencer,
right,
and we had our first cast, and the Go-Go's were there. So we all started working on it on our own and found, we sort of stripped everything away down to the skeleton that it was, and felt like, oh, you know, the bones here are so good, and there's some really splendid writing. And then we brought James Magruder on, with whom I've had wonderful collaborations, and he's a classicist and a dramatist and dramaturg, and so he came on to help flesh everything out, and he did his best to match the tone and style of what Jeff Witte had done. So right now, it's both of their work is represented, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to distinguish between them.
That can get touchy, I imagine, as you work on projects that you know, some people start with and then they don't necessarily finish with.
It was tricky. But because the producers, I think, and the Go-Go's felt very strongly that they wanted to start over with a new team.
Yeah.
There's only one person who is who was in the Oregon production or involved in it and is still in it, and that's Bonnie Milligan, who plays Pamela.
Oh, you know, my next question was actually about the casting and sort of this. You have kind of a killer cast, and it's full of people who you'll sort of recognize, like Rachel York, who's a Broadway name, or there's this woman named Monty Milligan, who I'd never seen before, who's
a star,
delightful and stellar. And there's sort of a big, diverse group of people that is as much a part of the message of the show as everything else. So, like, tell me about that. Tell me about sort of the casting process and how you imagined the people who populate this world that you were making up.
Right. Well, when we first started, I knew Bonnie unrelated to this. And when I read the script, I thought, well, this is a great part for Bonnie. And I wanted to find something for her because I think she's so special. And she's just waiting to arrive on Broadway. And sure enough,
this is her Broadway debut.
This is her debut. We have a lot of Broadway debuts.
I noticed that.
It's in part because my favorite thing to do, as you know, is to find people who the audience doesn't already have a relationship with.
Right.
So that when they meet them, they're meeting them for the first time as Melchior Gabor.
Right.
Or
Jonathan Groff, people.
Yes, exactly.
Back in the day, yes.
Right. Or Vendla.
Who's Lea
Michele.
I was about to call her Lea Salonga, but that's someone different.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so here, you know, is Bonnie Milligan and Andrew Durand, who plays Musidorus the Shepherd.
Yes.
And Taylor Iman Jones. People know who Peppermint is, but I love
and
that. You know, finding new people who can fulfill the role, but who aren't what we don't come expecting to see them in it.
Yeah, and the guy who plays Musidorus is one of those people that I think people who go see a lot of shows will be like, oh, that guy, what have I seen? And I had to look it up, and I was like, oh, right, he's that guy, but we see him in a whole kind of different way now.
Yeah, feels like he was born to play this role.
It does.
He's someone, as soon as I read it, I'm like, Andrew, that's a role for him.
And Bonnie and Andrew, I think, are the only ones that did the New York stage and film. Was there anyone else in our mix?
Tom Allen Robbins,
who is Demetus, who is just, I can't imagine anyone else playing that role.
Right.
But we did a number of readings after that, and each reading we found like a new piece of the puzzle and kept one and kept, you know, kept searching through. We found Alexandra Socha in our lab, who was offered the role very last second, right?
Yeah. Did you work with her in Spring Awakening, or was that after the...
No,
she replaced
Lea.
Okay,
and she was actually, she replaced Lea, but she was also in the ensemble.
Okay.
She was like in the chair of Rock and was an understudy from the beginning.
And there's also a former contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race, Peppermint, on the show. When and how did you find Peppermint?
Well, we were, one of the great things that Magruder added was the notion that the Oracle of Delphi, known as in this version as Pythio, was a non-binary character. And when we started thinking about how to cast it, it occurred to all of us that, you know, we live in a world now, thank God, we live in a world now where not only is it possible to cast non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, trans people in these roles, but it's actually the right thing to do. And so we started exploring that. We worked with another trans performer in a reading and in the lab, and then we had auditions, and Peppermint was the one that rose to the top very quickly for me.
Right. And Michael, this isn't the first time you've worked on a show that grew out of kind of some very well-known contemporary music.
Right.
Did your work on American Idiot, which you developed with Green Day, did that inform how you thought about what you did with Head Over Heels?
It did to an extent, and this is why I also wanted to go to Tom Kitt right away to work on the music.
Tom Kitt, the orchestrator. Also composer, but orchestrator in this case.
He's so, I mean, what he manages to take these well-known songs and allow them to be really true to what they are, but also give them a kind of theatricality. And he understands how to, you know, work the keys for different voice types. And, you know, with Green Day, it was Billy Joe singing everything.
Sure.
So when we did American Idiot, suddenly we had 19 people singing massive harmonies. We had women singing. We had men with different ranges than Billy Joe. So all of the key signatures had to all change. And also, you know, he would do theatrical things with them, and he does the same thing here. Like, before you hear Vacation, the music is actually Head Over Heels music. Mm-hmm. So you think, oh, we're going into Head Over Heels, but then it's Vacation.
Right.
So he creates a kind of a unifying score through his different motifs, and so that is something that he did in American Idiot, and you are you know responsible for American Idiot.
It's true. Would you like to tell that story right now?
I'd like to hear that story.
Okay. This is true, and I wanted to say it again because I love it. Right after Spring Awakening, I did an interview with Gordon, and one of the questions he asked me was like, "Is there another contemporary composer or group that I would be interested in making a show with?" Because it was after working with Duncan Sheik.
Right.
And I said, there's one show that is ready to go because the album is a show, and that's Green Day's American Idiot. And he dutifully, you know,
I wrote it down and put it in my story.
It was in the story. And a couple weeks later, whenever it came out, Tom Hulse, who's the producer of Spring Awakening, reads it, calls me up, and he said, "So what is this about American Idiot? Do you think we should pursue this?" I said, "Oh, knock yourself out, Tom. I'm sure Green Day wants to be on Broadway, and I'm sure that's going to work." And cut to 2 weeks later, I was sitting in an office with Green Day's manager and their agent, and they were into it. They sent Billy Joe to New York. He came to see Spring Awakening. We went to Bar Centrale after. We talked till they kicked us out of there about everything from punk and Broadway and family and the story of how American Idiot came to be, and he let me go for it. So it's all thanks to Gordon.
Wow.
I mean, I do what I can. Story. I do what I can. That's for great. The American theater.
Well, I loved and admired that show as an audience member, and knew that kind of taste-making, you know, ability was what would make this type of show work so well. Something that on paper, most people would say, no, that's crazy. You can't do that. You know, that is what made us leap in head first.
Right. Yeah. And so, Spencer, you've done a lot of work on So You Think You Can Dance, which
yes.
has definitely kind of popularized dance and an understanding of dance in a way that really didn't exist. How do you see the influence of that show in the dancers that you work with now, many of whom, because dancers are all, you know, very usually quite young, they've probably grown up with the show in a way that, you know, others of us who are a little older maybe didn't. Do you see that show's influence in
Yeah.
the dancers that come,
that
come
is
to Broadway
a
now?
Really, really great question, and the answer is absolutely yes. So You Think You Can Dance has been on since 2006, I believe, right. 6 or 7. I am starting my 10th season on the show this year, so I've been around since season 6. So there are many, many dancers, yes, who at 5 or 6 years old, that show came on for them, and they haven't known a world without it. It has indeed educated people sitting at home who have never been in a dance class. They've heard the judges' comments on both our shows and Dancing with the Stars, and they've now know the difference between a battement and a tourjeté and who's doing it correctly. And so I think the level of dance all around has had to be elevated, because you can't get away with what you could maybe, you know, 20 years ago. But the actual dancers, yes, they've been watching the tastemakers of dance weekly in their living rooms, and that has trickled down into the dance studios across the country. That has trickled into the convention scene and the dance competition scene, but has made, number one, dancers want to be versatile, because before, like, you might want to be just a hip-hop dancer or a tap dancer or a ballroom dancer, but they now see, oh, to be a great dancer, I need to be able to do everything. That is what is coming in the room now, is I'm seeing all sorts of people who can absolutely achieve every single style, because what is Broadway now? You have Hamilton, and, you know, you have my show, which is not only incredibly technical, but, you know, you also have to act and sing and all those other things. It's beyond the tricks, because now these dancers are doing all these, you know, insane tricks, but they've finally understood storytelling in a mainstream way, and that they have to act while they dance. And that's the most exciting thing about these younger dancers, is there is a fantastic performance quality.
Right. And so Head Over Heels is now running at the Hudson Theater. Let's talk about what's on your plate coming up next. I know, Michael, you've got a couple operas you're working on, is that
I
right?
I do, yeah. A new opera, Marnie,
yep.
that's based on the same source material as the Hitchcock movie,
right.
by Nico Muhly and Nick Wright,
right.
starring Isabel Leonard, who's going to be sensational. I think that's at the Met.
Yep.
We open in, I want to say, October.
Okay.
And then I go right into a brand new production of La Traviata, also at the Met.
How a lot of Broadway directors kind of end up also working on opera. How do those two things fit together for you in terms of?
You know, it's still storytelling with, you know, performers and sets and lights and music, and music is the lead thing. I think that's the one big difference between opera and musical theater, is like the buck always stops with the director,
right.
or the director choreographer when you're doing a musical, and with the opera, the conductor, the maestro, really is the final word. So I'm there. My service is to bring as much vitality and theatricality and dramatic interest and visual interest to what the music is. But we can't change the music.
Right.
Like, I remember when I started on Rigoletto, and I was like, oh, God, that transition is so long. Can we cut 8 bars? And they looked at me like I was insane. So it's like music wins,
right.
You know?
Right.
But it's a very interesting collaborative process to be the person who is not making the final decisions.
Yeah. And then, Spencer, what's next for you? Are you going to go be on the next season of
Say
You Think You
Can
Dance? I do. The
day after we open, I head back to L.A. We will have just started live episodes. So
right.
I will be back to So You Think You Can Dance for, like I said, my 10th year, which I cannot believe that's happened that quickly. And then I go to Germany to do... I work for this incredible nonprofit Broadway training program called Broadway Dreams Foundation, and we have recently expanded internationally. So I've directed 2 shows now in Russia. Mm-hmm. We've gone to Germany, to Stockholm, to Brazil. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work with the professionals of Germany, and I'll work with them for 2 weeks and put on a concert there.
A concert. So you're directing concerts, or you're directing existing shows?
It's not existing shows. We do usually like small snippets, like 20, 30-minute sections. The first year we went to Russia, I did cabaret, which was very interesting.
Oh, wow.
Cut out a lot of the things that maybe you shouldn't can't do in Russia now. Mm. And we did a small version of Hairspray, and we did a small version of Chess.
Cool.
So we'll go do that in Germany. And then I'm coming home and I'm directing and choreographing Singing in the Rain. It'll be one of my first times at La Mirada in L.A.
Great.
So starting to branch into that world as well.
And what's next on Broadway for the two of you? Do you know yet?
Next for me should be a revival of Burn This by Lanford
yep.
Wilson,
Good.
Starring Adam Driver.
Right.
At a theater to be announced sometime this spring.
Great. Good.
And I'm TBD.
Excellent. All right.
I technically live in LA and I do the TV thing a lot.
Right.
And when a Broadway show makes me want to come here, I do.
Yeah.
We'll work on it.
Yeah. We look forward to seeing what it is. Thanks, guys. Thanks for chatting with me. Nice to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Gordon.
That was director Michael Mayer and choreographer Spencer Liff. Two of the creators behind the new show featuring the music of the Go-Go's, Head Over Heels, now playing at the Hudson Theater on Broadway. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft in 2 weeks, I talk to composer Joe Iconis, the grassroots musical theater favorite who's getting a big New York moment with a new off-Broadway production of his musical, Be More Chill. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.